Imagine a school day built around your child's needs and interests. It's possible with K-12. K-12 powered schools are accredited, tuition-free, online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn from state-certified teachers trained to teach online. And with the flexibility to learn wherever there's internet, it can fit into any family schedule. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. You can make the switch at any time. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more.
The Killer Bees!
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Now bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Ooh, what up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham. Blank. Brendan behind the glass. It is Blank. Not only a Tuesday edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5, but Blank. Playoff baseball in Houston begins today. We're going to be out at Wakefield Crowbar Game 2 Thursday. Swing Blank. On by, hang out with us. The Wheelhouse will be there as well. We're going to talk plenty of baseball. We're also going to get off the air at 2 o'clock for the national broadcast of Game 1, Astros and Mariners. We're going to talk plenty of baseball today. 95% of our show is going to be baseball. But I have to ask you this question. Watching Monday Night Football yesterday, the Raiders gave the Chiefs a heck of a game. The Raiders, in a lot of ways, could have easily won that game, and you could say should have won that game. Can y'all explain to me, like I am 2 years old, why Josh McDaniels is going for a two-point conversion down by 1 point with 4.5 left to play in the fourth quarter? I just do not understand NFL head coaches that are trying to be cute and are outsmarting themselves with stupid decision after stupid decision.
So there's two head-scratchers for me because I would like to at least get to the other one. Because of the fact that I couldn't understand what the league is trying to do with their whole roughing the passer. But you're right. Here's the only, as you and I were talking about this prior to the show, the only, and I'm not saying that I feel this way. If I'm going to answer that with you saying, could anyone explain to me what McDaniels was thinking? If you take what he said in his interview coming out of halftime, I believe it was, where he was talking about the fact that we know they're going to put points on the board. We know they're prolific with the way they score points. We talked all week about wanting to play from being ahead instead of trying to chase them coming from behind. So maybe his thought process was, I don't want to give them the ball with a tie game, with a chance to bury me. I want them to have a little more panic, and I want us to play from ahead, so I'm going to go for two. I think it was stupid and ludicrous, and I think I'm going to make sure the record states that right now. I don't agree with him. But if I'm trying to answer based on his quotes during the game and what his mentality and philosophy was, maybe that's what he was thinking.
To me, it was just stupid. Like I can't even go beyond that because even if you get the 2-point conversion, like it's different between 30 seconds and 4 minutes and 30 seconds. At 30 seconds, you get the 2-point conversion. There's a decent chance you're going to win that football game. All you need to do is kill the clock, basically. Mm-hmm. 4.5 is so much time that you're probably going to get the football back. And turned out the Raiders ended up getting the football back. Even if they get the 2-point conversion. Now, all of a sudden, for Kansas City, the entire field is four-down territory. They go for it every single fourth down if it gets to that point. If you kick it and make it just tie the game, in a fourth-and-long situation, their side of the field, they're going to have to punt it. So they get the football back. Now they have to try to go and orchestrate a drive to win the game down by a point instead of being playing with house's money. They could have been playing with house's money in a tie football game, one drive to win the football game. And I understand they still had that, but the floor all of a sudden was losing the game as opposed to being tied in the game.
Well, I mean,
I just can't make any sense of
it. You look at it and say, worst case scenario, we're going to overtime.
Right.
Instead of saying, worst case scenario
if you get
is
a stop.
We lose by a point.
See, that's what it is, though. They needed to stop no matter what. And I want to be clear, I think it was a bad call. I think the mindset is, no matter what, we need to stop. And so it's asking my offense to do less to get the extra point here now, or get the 2 points rather than tie it up, then just ice the game, then to score again. And I'm not saying that that's the right frame of mind, but the thought process is we score here, no matter what we need to stop, I would rather just ask my offense to ice the game than ask them to score again.
Ice the game after you get a stop.
Right, but you, no matter what happens,
the stop becomes more difficult, though.
Sure.
The stop becomes like 25% more difficult because now all of a sudden you're bringing fourth down into play.
You are moving the pressure from the offense to the defense.
And the Raiders, they have a better what?
I don't think they have a very good anything, to be honest.
I would say their offense is better than their defense.
They proved last night throughout the game that Josh Jacobs was impossible to stop.
He looked good.
He looked really, really good. And I think if you're the Raiders, you're going, why the hell didn't we pick up his option for next year? Because he looked like no matter what they did, they couldn't stop him.
No, he looked really good. He ran over Justin Reed, poor Justin Reed. Ooh, even though Justin Reed got the tackle. He did get the tackle.
But and then tried to showboat it afterwards and to say, you know, by grabbing his feet and not letting go. He got Mack trucked.
Yeah, he got, that's a good way to put it. He got Mack trucked. I just don't understand. 4.5 to go, down by one, you're going for the lead. Like, this isn't going for the win. Like, I could totally understand if there's 15 seconds left in the game, you're at Arrowhead, your offense is the better unit on your football team, I'm going to go for the win. I get it. 4.5 left to play, you're likely to get the football back. Even if you do convert the two-point conversion, now it's four down territory all the way up the field for Kansas City. These NFL head coaches are making like these boneheaded decisions. Brandon Staley's the worst at it.
Staley's the worst. Daboll, it worked out, if you remember, I think it was week one, where instead of playing for the tie, but it was like no time remaining, they went for two, and they got the win, and it was emotional. And it's just,
that's like a coin flip.
Yeah, and so that was a bit. That's a different scenario. Yeah. But leaving all that time on the clock, and instead of saying, hey, we're tied, and we're going to get each team like almost like overtime. Each team's going to get the ball maybe one more time, may the best team win. If you miss it, And you know what the percentages and the odds are going in, and everybody's analytical and their analytics department's telling you whether you should go for it or not. But the fact is, you're putting yourself behind the eight ball intentionally without having to by taking the risk.
And now, you need a stop to get the – there's two things to look at. If you don't get it, which they didn't, right? They lost by a point because they didn't get the two-point conversion. They didn't kick the extra point to tie it. Like, you need to get a stop to get the football back. They did. And then you have to go score because you're down a point now. But even if you do get it, you still need the stop. But if Kansas City moves the ball down the field, they're in field goal range, they take the lead, everything's four down territory, and then you put it back on the offense again. NFL head coaches, to me, are just outthinking themselves left and right.
Could you defend this if you thought that the Raiders' defense was substantially better? Because I think that's the argument behind it.
Well, Lovie Smith could.
If you believe in
your
defense,
you know how much. If it's a Lovie coach team with not even a great defense,
Lovie wouldn't have went for two. He's too conservative.
He would protect his
defense.
He wouldn't
have gone for two, but to Brendan's scenario, if there was a chance for him to put it on his defense, but say, I'm going to roll with that,
I think if you have
would.
An elite defense, but your offense isn't good enough, you could justify it.
But you need to convert the two-point conversion. Like, you're counting on both units of the field.
Right, exactly right. He's right, because you have to at least somewhat believe in your offense because they got to get the 2 points.
But even a bad offense scores the two-point conversion on close to 50% of attempts.
As opposed to, driving it after your defense gets a stop in a tie game.
I think the scenario that needs to play out, you need to have an elite defense, not just a good defense. You need to, trust your defense.
I would say that at the very least, your defense has to be better than your offense.
Yeah.
To justify it in that spot.
Yes, I think that's fair.
At the very least.
As it relates to offense, and we saw this with the A&N game with one play from the two. We saw this with the play last night. We've seen this multiple times with fourth downs. How in the world, to me, is it that either the corner fade route.
I hate that play.
I really hate. But I also hate the play call they made last night to just try and jam it straight up the middle. I don't understand why you don't get to the edge and RPO it.
I think it was a read option.
And have options.
I think it was a read option.
It looked like he just turned and handed it off and said, good luck.
It looked like a read option that just wasn't there. And secondly, I'm not running a read option with David Carr's brother. He's a decent athlete. Like, I don't want to knock David Carr's brother.
Patrick Mahomes, I'm doing that.
Yeah, Patrick Mahomes is a little more athletic. Like, I think David Carr's brother
is dynamic. He can throw it from all Mahomes. Yeah, he can make all the throws from weird angles and stuff. David Carr's not that guy.
David Carr's brother. I mean, I think that he's somewhat athletic. I don't think he's
he's not a statue.
He's not Lamar Jackson. He's not Pat Mahomes. I'm not running a read option there. It looked a little read option.
He's also not Josh Allen. Like, he could tuck
he can bulldoze
Josh Allen. Yeah, right.
He can bulldoze you.
Right over you.
Yeah, we're seeing a lot of decisions like that in the NFL. And I think it's like this modern age. Everybody's trying to be new school, analytical. And you're like, we saw this in baseball like 10 years ago. Now we're seeing it now in the NFL where Brandon Staley's going for it up by 2 points on his side of the field on a 4th and 2, and Keenan Allen's tweeting about it. What are we doing? Like, there's, to me, you need Phil. Like, I understand that, like, I'm the number guy on the show. Even with that, though, like, you never go full numbers. You never go full analytics. You have to have the feel of how your offense is faring against their defense, how your defense is faring against their offense, and putting in all the equations. Like, it's good, helpful information. It should not be the end-all, be-all. And I would love to see, like, the computer cowboy. Maybe you saw this, Brendan, where there's a Twitter handle that, you know, they grade the moves. They graded Brandon Staley move is actually the numbers tell you that you should have done that. Computers tell you that you should have done that. I didn't see the exact numbers on the two-point conversion. I can't imagine that the computers told Josh McDaniels to go for it in that spot. I just don't believe it. Maybe they do. I don't believe it.
Oh, wait. I'm sorry, I'm looking at the wrong one. I'm trying to find it real quick.
Because, like, the Brandon Staley one was the most egregious one over the weekend, right?
Yeah.
The computer said that they should have went for it in that spot. I'm not going for it in that spot ever.
No, I think that on the road, you're trying to be in a position of strength, so you're trying to not play, because on the road, playing for a win in overtime is more difficult and all those things. But he went for it in the first half on his own side of the field, and he ended up getting the big play, risk-reward, to Devontae Adams.
Mm-hmm.
So he showed early on, he showed his hand that he was going to be aggressive. But I think there's a difference between aggressive and stupid. I think that with all the time early in the game, you could take a risk there, especially because you already had a lead, you were already in a position of strength, you're in a good spot. But here, you're literally playing from behind, and you get a chance to even it up again, and you pass on it to take the biggest gamble of the night with hardly the padding that you had early on with the game clock and the position in the game. Yeah, I don't see how that made sense last night.
So technically the model doesn't do two-point conversions.
Well, that's great.
But the guy who made it answered what it says. And he said very slight lean towards kicking the extra point, but it's not
really
significant either way.
That's interesting that it's still very – the computers are even saying kick the extra point. Now, slightly – but their computers are telling you to kick the extra point. That team should be better than they are. And I think Josh McDaniels is to blame. I give David Carr's brother a little bit to blame. David Carr's brother's frustrating because he can make the plays. He can make the throws.
Yeah.
He looks good at times, but there's other times where he makes terrible mistakes.
Let me tell you why you're right and then some. And it's not as bad on the surface as the things that we've seen happen from the Texans or previously with a David Culley or the Nathaniel Hacketts in Denver. That last play during that last drive trying to get the win, to have two receivers run into each other shows you that there's a whole bunch of disarray in terms of behind the scenes.
That was kind of unfortunate. Devontae Adams got jammed at the line. It ruined the timing on that play.
But I'm saying, that's fine if it happens in and around the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
But because two guys ran into the exact same area and one tripped the other guy, that's never supposed
to
happen.
What I didn't love about that is it's 4th and 1 and you had that many deep routes.
Down again.
That was a problem.
That's the third
too.
Time from this weekend where you say down and distance. Get the first down and then worry about taking chances.
Yep. 713-780-ESPN. 713-780-3776. Killer Bees on to 2:00 today before we take the national broadcast of the Mariners and the Astros. So we got plenty of baseball to talk about. Look, Jose Altuve yesterday was talking about how he wants to retire as an Astro. What are you willing to sacrifice to keep Jose Altuve here for his entire career? 713-780-ESPN, twitch.tv/ESPN975. He's at Pac-Man Joel on Twitter. I'm at Jeremy Branham. Look, if you want to bet some baseball today, there's 4 baseball games. One already started. If you want to bet those games, well, you can head over to BetUS.com. You want to bet some NFL games this week? Can't bet Texans. They're on a bye week. You can do that at BetUS.com. You want to bet some NBA preseason? BetUS.com has you covered. They're back for their 28th year of NFL action, the industry's biggest sign-up bonus of up to 200%. BetUS offers members the opportunity to cash in on all of those leagues, NFL, college football, Major League Baseball, NBA, and much, much more. BetUS also has hundreds of new casino games while you're sweating out those sports bets, including the coolest European slots and live dealers waiting for you at the tables. You need a sportsbook with integrity and longevity, and you need to know you're going to get paid. You need a sportsbook that offers everything, including live betting, MMA, golf, horses, esports, and and all kinds of crazy bets. Call today, 1-800-79-BET-US. That's 1-800-79-BET-US, and they'll walk you through setting up an account. Nobody in the industry gets better bonuses than BET-US. Join now, mention 97.5, and you can get up to 200% in bonuses on your first deposit. Nobody beats that. Head to BETUS.com. Join today. That's BET-US, where the game begins.
Razor-sharp commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
We asked Brendan to put it on the baseball game. He turned it on Friends. Friends is on the television screen that we were watching. We were saying, hey, we're going to put on a little baseball.
That's just how
playoff baseball starts today.
You said it was on TBS, so I turned on TBS.
Well, I didn't want to mention that. You weren't supposed to mention that, Brendan. You were supposed to. That was supposed to be behind the scenes. It's actually on Fox for whatever reason. Jose Altuve yesterday, Brian T. Smith asked him the question, do you want to be in Houston forever? Here was the second baseman's response.
I was born in Venezuela, but Houston is, like I said, my second home. The city, the fans, my teammates, the whole organization is just amazing. And hopefully I want to stay here all my career.
Look, Bregman said the same thing.
Loved it.
People always say that, you know, they want to stay here, right? And I'm usually very much on the side of, hey, if a player wants to make too much money and he's not worth that money anymore, let him walk. I said that about Carlos Correa. I said, don't pay the man. I said that about George Springer. I said that about Gerrit Cole. I draw the line with Jose Altuve. I will do whatever if it means keeping Jose Altuve in an Astros uniform forever. And I think part of the reason, there's two reasons. One, he's an all-time great, probably going to be the greatest Houston Astro of all time. Secondly, he's been loyal to you. Not once, but twice, he has accepted a contract that was probably below market value. The first one was highway robbery by the Houston Astros. Jose Altuve won the MVP on some peanut salary. And then they took care of him. They paid him a contract that was better suited, but still below market value. He's been so loyal to you. He's everything you want from a superstar. He's humble. He doesn't talk about himself. It's all about the team. I would sacrifice, even this, Blankers, I would sacrifice one playoff appearance in Jose Altuve's career if it means I keep Jose Altuve in an Astros uniform for his entire career.
Let me tell you, Jeremy, where that matters. Where does that, if it happens at the end of his career, that might be at a time when the run is over and it's like a Pujols or a Cabrera or guys like that. When they're not the player and you're not the team that you were when you re-upped them or brought them in because you needed them to be a key cog in either keeping a run alive or really starting a run with a good team. Because to me, it's a rarity these days to see the Dirk Nowitzkis and the Kobe Bryants. We know Dream even played a year in Toronto. You know, the fact is that it's the ideal storybook is that the guy starts and finishes career with you and it's, you know, nothing but sunshine and rainbows and you know, you retire his number. And that's the Dirk Nowitzki story, or for the most part, and the Kobe Bryant story. But from an Astros perspective, it's just refreshing to hear both Bregman and Altuve say that. Now, when the rubber hits the road, it's going to be at what price? Because if they're not trying to break the bank and they want to do that, then it's realistic that you're going to keep them around and let them play it all out. If they want big money when their next contracts come up, it might be a different story because as we know and we find out in sports on a daily basis, it's more of a business than it's ever been in the past. And seeing the failed big-time long-term contracts or trying to do this with certain guys has cost teams too dearly and they don't want to do it again. And if you get an analytical general manager, they're not going to do that at big money.
I overpay for Altuve. I overpay to keep Jose Altuve in an Astros uniform forever.
I don't think
he's in an Astros uniform his entire
unless
career.
Unless his agent is really deeply involved in it, Altuve's the kind of guy that dictates it and says to his agent, I'm not trying to break the bank anymore. I just want to make sure I stay here. My family's happy here, and I want to be here.
Well, he's a Boris guy.
But that's what I'm saying.
But he's told Boris that I want to be an Astros.
That's what I'm saying. He's got to dictate to Boris.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, and we've seen this with Boris clients specifically, where it doesn't matter what you want, if he can get more money from someone else, he's negotiating from the standpoint of, I'm just trying to get every penny I can, and it doesn't matter as much where the player wants to play unless he's adamant to Boris. Because you look at what happened with the Freddie Freeman situation, whether you believe all of it, some of it, or somewhere in between, none of it.
Well, Gottlieb said he lied.
But Gottlieb lied.
Right, Gottlieb
said he
lied.
But then Freddie Freeman doesn't fire him if there isn't something behind the scenes to where he probably didn't get all the details of the final offer from Atlanta.
I don't know. That was a weird situation.
But the reason why I say that too, Jeremy, is when he went back there, it would be one thing in the first at bat in Atlanta that it would have been an emotional and it had been a stoppage of play and all that. It was a three-game series where you could tell his Dodger teammates were starting to get really annoyed, and the comments that he was making to go along with it seemed like if he had his druthers, he still would rather be a Brave than a Dodger, and I think it was pissing his current teammates off.
Yeah, there were some thoughts that was the case, that he was making mm-hmm. people in the locker room mad because he was enjoying that little reunion back to Atlanta. 713-780-ESPN, what would you sacrifice to keep Jose Altuve in an Astro uniform for his entire career? I would sacrifice one playoff appearance. Champ on Twitch says, I would sacrifice my left arm for Altuve to retire as an Astro.
That would be a bit much. A little bit drastic.
What would you sacrifice? I'm the opposite. Like, I'm willing to let go of players. I don't mind roster turnover. I'm fine playing the whole, like, value relative to the dollar game. Like, I am totally okay with it. So, like, saying that I would overpay and keep Jose Altuve as an Astro forever is unlike me. That's not a characteristic of me. But the reason that it's so important to me is that he showed you that he is loyal. Mm-hmm. He has been clutch in the postseason. He's going to be the greatest Houston Astro of all time. And you need to take care of guys like that, even if it means that you're keeping him when he's hitting 230 at the age of 42 because he's chasing 3,500 hits. You take care of Jose Altuve.
You look at what happened in St. Louis this year on the return of Albert Pujols and how they were hanging on every pitch for every home run and every opportunity to thank him and support him because of all the great years that he had in St. Louis. It's kind of like the same thing with Altuve, but he doesn't have to have that gap where he went to play for the Dodgers and the Angels. And you would love to see that play out. I'm trying to think of what I would sacrifice, and I think maybe it would be an up-and-coming or a prospect second baseman that's coming up that you believe could be a guy for you. But you realize that would mean trying to uproot Jose Altuve, so maybe you trade him away and get a prospect that plays a different position. That's something that, you know, I look at and say, okay, if that's the sacrifice I make so that Altuve plays a couple more years in an Astros uniform and finishes career here, it might be somewhat stupid because you don't know how the prospect's going to turn out, but you know that you're doing the right thing to support a guy that's done nothing but leave it all on the field for you his whole time wearing your uniform.
I don't think that's a huge sacrifice. You're trading a prospect for one of the greatest players of all time.
Well, I don't think you're saying missing the playoffs. You might suck by the end of his career, and you're going to miss the playoffs anyway.
No, but I'm saying I am giving up one playoff appearance. Like, I'm giving it up. Like, I know that I would go to the playoffs, and I'm willing to give up a postseason appearance to keep Jose Altuve here forever. What would you sacrifice? 713-780-ESPN. King of Twitch says, I'd be willing to move the Texans in order to sign Altuve long-term.
That's kind
of on-brand for King of Twitch, though. He doesn't really love the Texans a whole lot. So that's on-brand for something that King of Twitch would said. 1538 said, give him a bulldozer. Kind of like Uncle Drayton gave
Roy Oswalt
the tractor. But Roy Oswalt didn't stay in Astro his entire career.
Well, I mean, at least with the Rangers, Odor got two horses. I think they were supposed to be thoroughbreds, kind of like him. Yeah, I don't know if any of them turned out. Look, I just think it's such a rarity, but it would be such a great story if Altuve and Bregman, because Bregman was drafted by the team. And again, this is the opposite of Carlos Correa, where you're not looking to take the biggest bag possible and get paid the most money so you can shop where you want and buy what you want without getting a discounted price. I think at a certain point, and of the guys, I think Altuve is the most likely to say, I'm willing to take a little less or take less for the realistic hometown discount to say I want to stay in an Astros uniform where I'm comfortable.
I think it's realistic too, but I would overpay. 7436.
But not for a long period of time, would you? Would you give a long-term deal?
I would.
Like, you're against long-term deals and big money.
That's why I'm telling you. This is unique for me.
Okay.
It's unique for me because it's a unique situation for Jose Altuve.
You thought he was done already.
No, I didn't.
He was way on the decline.
Not what I said. It's putting words in my mouth. 7436 said I would sacrifice the wheelhouse. That's not very nice.
Sacrifice something that has value.
Altuve does nothing but bring revenue to the Astros. Even if you overpay for him, the return you get money-wise is too appealing. Think of the money they will bring in during his retirement season. That was true for Biggio. Let's go out to the HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Chad, what would you sacrifice to keep Jose Altuve in an Astro uniform for his entire life?
I tell you what, man, I might have to go with my left nut.
Oh.
Wow. I hope you still got the other one just in case.
Chad, why not the right one? I'm just curious. Like, why do you lean left there?
You know, Let's not go there.
Let's not go there. Whoa, Chad's not telling us something. He said, let's not go there. Chad's not telling us something. You guys with me on that?
A little bit.
Am I alone?
No, you.
I don't think he thought it through.
I don't know. Let's not go there.
I think he just didn't. He just doesn't want to lose Altuve. That's all.
1-2-1-3 said, I'd give up the Killer Bees. Come on, 1-2-1-3. You wouldn't do that. We know it. 713-780-ESPN. What would you give up to have Jose Altuve in an Astro uniform for his entire career? 713-780-3776. Also, the playoff roster is out. There's one pitcher that is out. It's kind of breaking news. It's Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5.
Talking sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
We'll get to the Astros ALDS roster in a moment. Caleb says, I'd sacrifice both nuts. I don't need them anymore. I got four kids.
We've seen them.
It's a great point.
We've seen them, so he's okay.
We've seen Caleb's kids or his nuts?
No, we've seen them. Remember the whole family was at Cobos? Weren't they at Cobos Q?
Were they? I don't think that was Caleb.
I think so. You don't know?
No, that was Jasper.
Oh, Jasper. You're right.
Yeah, that was Jasper. Brandon T., I would sacrifice my fiance. I hope your fiance is not a listener to the Killer Bees. Actually, I do. I hope she is. I hope she is a listener to the Killer Bees, and we just added you, Brandon T.
Let's also be clear. That was via text?
It was via text.
There's a history of that message now.
That is true.
That is not something you put in writing.
Brandon T., don't worry. Killer Bees will take care of you. We got your back, Brandon T., because your name starts with a B. We'll make sure that we erase that and that it's never seen. And we'll never tell your fiance that you would sacrifice her to keep Jose Altuve in an Astro uniform forever. 713-780-ESPN.
Jared and Beaumont, who's a massive fan of the Killer Bees, said he'd give up his sex life if he had one just to make sure that Altuve stayed.
Oh.
Well, so, I mean, good luck on both fronts, I guess.
If he doesn't have one, though, is that a tree falling in a forest and exactly. No one's around to hear it?
He's not willing to give up anything is what it
or
sounds
a texter
like.
Or yeah. That texts too often and we don't care.
That's not much of a sacrifice, I don't think. Let's head out to the HRP listener line. What would you sacrifice to keep Jose Altuve in an Astro uniform for his entire career? Edward, you're in the hive with the Killer Bees. What would you sacrifice?
Bregman.
Wow. From way downtown, bang.
Here, thanks for the call, Edward. I don't disagree with him. I was going to add, like, because also, like, another angle to have this conversation, they both said it yesterday. Which of the, Jose Altuve said, I want to be here forever. Alex Bregman said, I want to be here forever, which, let's be honest, I mean, if you get asked that question and you're in an Astros clubhouse, you're going to say, I want to be here forever. But if you had to pick one, which of the two are you picking?
I think Edward was prepared to human sacrifice Alex Bregman.
Well, here's the thing.
That's next
level. The question to me, if it was Bregman from the start of the year when he was scuffling, I could see people jumping off that bandwagon. But the way he finished the season, the last couple of months of the year, what he put together and found the pop in his bat again and all the different things that we've grown accustomed to with Alex Bregman, and you want to jump off that train now?
I mean, you pick for me then. You taking Altuve or Bregman for the rest of their career?
I mean, you also have to, from an analytical standpoint, I'm trying to analyze this and say, Bregman's, how old is Bregman?
He's a little younger.
Probably
3 years younger,
three
I would
or four
guess.
Years you're sacrificing on top of whatever stats you get. I mean, I think he can get another third baseman.
There you go.
I mean, so, of like, the two.
You put up that fight and then you answer out
no, because I think it's ludicrous to say that you'd give it up when you don't give him up when you don't have to.
That's what I'm saying. You got to pick one or the other. We're sacrificing things for Jose Altuve. Would you sacrifice Alex Bregman?
To keep you can have both of
well,
them.
Look, you're right.
Something else.
Now. You're trying to like you're trying to give away a little like mediocre double A prospects.
The baseball gods demand a sacrifice.
I just never jumped off the bandwagon on Bregs.
Me either.
And I thought that. You know, and I'm thinking, look, that's part of the reason why you're going to have sustainable success is you still have both those guys in your lineup. I don't want to give up one of them.
I know what you're saying. Like, I don't want to give up Bregman either. And Bregman's still under contract for two more years. But if I had to pick one of the two that I'm going to keep
in Astro uniform. How old's Altuve right now?
He's 31? 32. It's 32-28. Altuve's 32. Bregman's 28.
Okay, so four-year difference.
Which is, I mean.
That's significant.
Significant.
Yeah.
It's significant. You want to like really dive into this?
Yeah,
like a couple of reasons that I don't really love Bregman long term.
Go.
One, I don't think Bregman's playing up to a $32 million contract, which I mean he had one really good month, and I like Bregman, but I don't like him at $30 million.
So that it started at 20 and went up.
Yeah, because they bought out a couple of the arbitration years.
Right.
Yeah.
So because originally it was 5 years and $100 million? The extension?
Off the top of my
head. I always thought it was just 20-20-20, but evidently...
It was 100 for 5.
Okay.
It was 100 for 5, but they had escalators.
The escalators I didn't factor in.
The other thing, too, I wonder how Alex Bregman's going to be defensively in 4 years.
See, but the thing is, I would question more Altuve's defense with that chicken wing he's got for throwing.
Altuve's not great defensively at this point in his career either.
I think Bregman makes so many great plays with his glove, and I don't think his arm has left him at all.
It's not great for a third baseman.
I have a hard time. Look, their defense as a whole I've been a pretty big supporter of, but I just have a hard time crapping on Bregman's defense at third base.
Look, I don't want to make this an Alex Bregman burn segment, because I like Alex Bregman a lot, and I hope he has a huge postseason, but which of the two would you keep forever? I got to go Jose Altuve. I got to go with the greatest ever. And even if it means that you lose production there. 713-780-ESPN. What would you keep? What would you sacrifice to keep Jose Altuve long term?
Dusty Baker.
Yeah, that's an easy one.
Okay, yeah.
You're not really pushing yourself.
But see, I'm making a
there.
Sacrifice. I moved it up from your prospect.
That's not a sacrifice. That's like a
James Click.
That's celebration.
I'll give up James Click too.
Well, I want Sig. So.
Well, there you go. So then
I'm
you're
all
happy
in for Sig.
Yeah, I'm going to give up Dusty.
How about Crane?
Ooh, I might.
That's a little bit of a plot
That's an interesting
twist.
Question.
I think I might, depending on who you get to replace him.
Man.
If you get Jeff Bezos, I'm good.
But that's the risk. You don't know.
If it's Drayton McClain?
Then I don't.
See you later, Jose. Thank you for everything you've done.
The story that always gets me, that tells you everything about Uncle Drayton, and Lance and John always have others, but the one that always gets me to figure out what it would be like to have an owner that clueless was, I guess, Drayback pitched a complete game shutout one night in the Dome.
Yeah.
And Terry Collins was the manager. And the next day at batting practice, he was holding court with the media, and someone from the clubhouse said, hey, Drayton's on the phone for you. You got to take this. And so Terry Collins said, excuse me, went over to the bullpen or the dugout phone, came back shaking his head and was just red in the face, pissed off. And they were like, are you going to tell us? And he goes, can you believe the owner just asked me why I'm not starting Drayback tonight if he pitched 9 innings without giving up a run last night?
Yeah.
And everybody's like, did he? He goes, I'm done. I'm not saying another word about it.
I believe it. I heard
I
one,
believe it too.
I played a round of golf once with Art Howe, and I think Art was here. It must have been when Drayton owned the team. I think he was his first manager. And one of the first times they interacted, during the season, he was like, look, I win 9 out of my 10 business deals. You should be winning 9 out of 10 baseball games.
Oh, my God.
And Art's just like,
doesn't work that way.
It's not the way it really works in Major League Baseball.
So that would be the biggest obstacle is you could live with another owner if you got another owner that cared about baseball and either knew how to stay out of the way or pick his spots when to get involved and give you every resource to go make the team as good as possible.
Yeah. 713-780-ESPN. What would you sacrifice to keep Altuve here long term forever?
What if it was Cal?
For career. That's an easy answer. Somebody just texted in 9240, Jack Easterby. That's a reward. That's not a sacrifice.
Right. No, I'm saying what if a Cal-like owner took over for Crane?
Oh, I thought you meant sacrifice.
No, 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 no. I'm saying what if Crane sold, but the guy you got was like Cal?
That's tough. Look, I don't think Cal is as bad an owner as we the story is still being told on Cal as an owner.
Well, sure.
If Nick Caserio is a good GM, we're gonna look back in 5 years and be like, yeah, Cal was not bad.
Here's where that scenario would work out for you. You get a Cal, but he hires a real general manager that you can trust and just gives him the keys and says, do the right thing.
Right.
Then you can handle a Cal. But if you got a meddling Cal, now you're in trouble.
Well, Cal ain't meddling.
But Cal's the kind of guy.
We know he's not meddling.
But Cal's the kind of guy that, from a loyalty standpoint, overpays Altuve.
He's gonna spend money.
Right, but like the J.J. Watt situation, because of the longevity and the marketing and the popularity, Cal's more worried about that than performance on the field and the right value for the player at that point in his career.
Battery Chuck said, sacrifice that train-driving dude in left field. What do they call him? Bobby Dynamite?
Bobby Dynamite.
Hey, you trying to sacrifice Bobby Dynamite? He gets the crowd hype during the playoffs. Why are you trying to sacrifice Bobby Dynamite? Todd the Show said, I would sacrifice Chandler Rome.
Again, I don't mind Chandler Rome.
Again, that's not really a sacrifice. A lot of people don't like Chandler Rome.
Because he's not afraid to give him his honest opinion without... They want him all to be. Everybody wants him to be an Astros homer.
He can be a little pompous.
He can be.
He can be a little arrogant on the streets of Twitter.
He ain't Brian T. Smith, but he can be a little pompous.
See, Brian T. Smith is like pompous and Q&As, press conferences.
Wow.
Well, I don't mind Brian. I don't mind Brian. But Chandler Rome's more like arrogent on Twitter. Like, you just block
they all
people.
Can't be McTaggart. Let's just put it
no,
down.
No, McTaggart's the absolute best.
Without question.
Risk says, I would sacrifice $1 hot dog night. I've never really taken advantage of that. The question that I would have, do I have to sacrifice my Hot Dog Tuesday shirt?
Well, and then how many ring nights would you sacrifice?
I've never had one of their rings.
I haven't either, but I know that they're very popular. No.
They're very popular?
I have
people
one.
To the, what
they have like 11 of them during the year when they win it. Either the American League or the World Series. You're guaranteed to have between 7 and 11 ring nights.
What's
and that's
yours?
All for marketing.
I don't even remember. It was definitely only an AL championship ring. It wasn't a World Series
oh,
ring.
Oh, you have a ring. I thought you meant you had a sacrifice.
No, no, no. I have an Astros ring.
You have an American League replica ring?
I do. They were giving them out. I didn't know when I was going. They were giving them out my first year here when they played the Tigers.
You went to a Tiger game in Houston. Big C says, keep Altuve until he retires, but the Astros are mediocre until he retired. That is a sacrifice. That's kind of what they did with Biggio, right? You know, Biggio, they kept him around forever. He wasn't the player that he once was. They weren't a playoff contender.
Well, Baggy, kind of too, they dealt with a guy that literally was playing with one arm.
They went to the World Series that year.
Yeah, but he basically was on the bench, and they let him pinch hit.
Yeah, he didn't. He
couldn't throw.
DH'd
yeah, and he barely could swing.
Yeah, he wasn't the player. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. All right, let's get into the playoff roster reaction. The Astros have announced their playoff roster. What were the decisions, and why did one player get left off? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Talking sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, Astros have announced their 26-man ALDS roster. We were talking about this for months. The questions you had, would the Astros keep 14 position players or 13? Because the Phillies kept 13 pitchers. But the Braves kept 12, the Mariners kept 12. Turns out the Astros will keep 12 as well. Now, one of those pitchers, Phil Maton, might have had a hand in the reason that he did not make the roster. Chandler Rome reporting that Phil Maton fractured a bone in his right pinky finger after punching his locker in disappointment after his final regular season outing on Wednesday. He had surgery yesterday and is out for the postseason. Classic case of serenity now and sanity later for Phil Maton, who never shows any sort of expression. I'm not sure Phil Maton was going to make the roster anyways, but it made the decision very easy, and it made it an easy conversation.
I think sometimes, you know how all year we've been saying in a lot of ways, like, it's worked itself out before anybody's had to do anything. When we were talking about when Aledmys Diaz got hurt, when you were trying to figure out if you had to find a spot for him in the lineup and what was going to happen at center field, and then Jake got injured and struggled and did all those things. This might be another one of them where Dusty's tough decisions with James Click don't have to be made because it was made for you. He had to have seen the writing on the wall. He's been hot dog snot for a month and a half to 2 months. He crapped the bed again in a meaningless game where they were just trying to see if they could remotely rely on him, where there might be an outside chance he could be considered. And then he took matters literally into his own hand, and did it for him. So thanks and good riddance and bye. What's his contract situation?
He's probably under club control for another year or two. He's fine as a pitcher. I mean, he's not bad.
Regular season, he's okay.
He had a really good postseason last year. He only allowed one run in one
outing. If I was him, I'd work on two things in the offseason, developing another pitch and trying to get something to more spin rate.
He's under club control next year and then a free agent after next year. I think he'll be an Astro for one more year.
He's probably pretty cheap, too, so they'll keep him.
Yeah, they'll keep him. He's not bad. Like, he's probably one of their lesser relief pitchers, but you can do far worse than Phil Maton. I mean, I think he had an ERA around 3.5.
He was good for a while against lefties, too.
3.84.
If you're not going to carry a lefty reliever.
Yeah, they don't carry Will Smith, which is the other thing. Yeah. I thought Maton had a chance to make the roster. I thought it was going to come down to Maton and Urquidy. And whenever I saw the roster, I tweeted about it. I said the Astros ended up keeping Urquidy because he can go deeper into games or pitch longer. Well, it turned out they didn't have that decision to make because Phil Maton had a broken finger and he made the decision for him. But the pitchers, Abreu, Hunter Brown, Garcia, Javier, McCullers, Montero, Neris, Presley, Stanek, Urquidy, Valdez, Verlander, really no surprises other than maybe Urquidy over Maton. The surprise was that he had a broken pinky. And then no lefty for Will Smith, which we talked about this yesterday with the Mariners being a lineup that is heavy right-handed lineup.
Yep.
What's the big turd, the fat turd, whatever his nickname is? He's a switch hitter.
The big dumper.
The big dumper. He's a switch hitter. The only real like lefty that they have is Adam Frazier. So, like, are you going to roster Will Smith to face Adam Frazier?
No. And plus, you got to leave him in for three hitters, yep. So the other two guys could do damage.
Yeah, so it was, they have guys at the bottom of the order, like Kelnick and Crawford, who are lefties, but are you keeping Will Smith so that they can face the bottom of the order when you have other relievers? He's lefty.
Is he?
Whenever you have other pitchers who get lefties out. So they don't keep that. One of the surprises, maybe, was that David Hensley made the roster. You're keeping two catchers.
Yeah, yep.
Some people thought there might be three, only two. Maldonado, Vasquez, and then the position players, Altuve, Bregman, Diaz, Dubon, Gurriel, Hensley, Mancini, Pena, Alvarez, McCormick, Myers, and Tucker.
Had someone in the Houston media try to convince me and wanted me to go on the air and talk about the fact Mancini wasn't going to make the playoff roster.
Yeah, that
said
was
it
silly.
Was stupid and ludicrous then, reminded that person with a voicemail that it was stupid and ludicrous since it's hard to be left off the roster and start at DH today.
Whenever you said that to me yesterday, I didn't give it any attention.
I just couldn't even believe it. I was in complete amazement that I can understand a conversation about like an Urquidy, but not a Trey Mancini. No matter what he did or didn't do in the strikeouts he's had, that's never going to happen. I look at it, you're right, Hensley is a surprise to me, but like you and I have talked about multiple times, he's a stick. You know, at first you say, oh, it's just a minor league guy that the pitchers don't know how to pitch to yet. But, they'll come around on him. He has proven that he can be a stick.
I like him quite a bit. And if I'm looking ahead to next year's team, like Diaz is a free agent, I would like to have Diaz back.
You sure? Didn't we look at that one time? Where
Ledmus Diaz?
Yeah.
He's a free agent.
He's free?
Uh-huh.
I thought there was an option somewhere.
Mm-mm, not okay. On Diaz. No, but if I would like Ledmus Diaz back, but if they don't bring him back... I mean, Hensley's your utility guy.
You lose versatility, but you get a real solid utility.
He doesn't play outfield yet.
Right.
But Mickey Story, who does the managing at Sugarland, mm-hmm. He said that he thinks he could play left if called upon. So that would be something that I'm working on if I'm David Hensley in the offseason.
Right.
I'm playing some left field, maybe even some center field a little bit too.
Yep.
Now, if they do bring Diaz back, which I want them to bring Diaz
back. I think
back,
he's another guy like a poor man's Altuve in the fact that he likes it here. Yeah. And because he's been hurt so much.
People have told me he doesn't want to play every day, which I find shocking. But if that's true,
and
this is the perfect spot
for him. And he likes it here. And he knows that when he's hot, they're going to keep him in the lineup and do things like that. I think I could see him doing like a five a year for multiple years and want to stay.
If you do go that route, I'm just saying to Mauricio Dubon,
bye-bye.
Thank you for the year.
Bye-bye.
We're moving on. Because
yeah.
I like Hensley more than I like Dubon.
I do, too.
Like, Dubon's fine as, like, your last guy on the bench because he can play every position.
Hensley's not going to be your fill-in center fielder, but he definitely can do what Trey Mancini does in left field.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. And he can play every infield position, too.
Yep.
So you have your utility infielder. You have a guy who can maybe pick up left field.
With his body type, you could play him at first base.
Yeah, he's tall.
Yep.
He's tall. I don't know if his bat plays there.
I'm not saying every day, but what I'm saying is, again, much like a guy that you can get to fill in another, like Diaz could play first base too. You could have him fill in at first base because he's tall and he can dig a ball out of the dirt because he's an infielder.
So not only did Mancini make the roster, which I don't know what your friend was smoking, although I understand that he might.
I kind of could tell you. Yeah, I could kind of tell you, and other people could too.
He's also starting for the Houston Astros
today. That's what I said. What, a DH?
One of the questions that I have with the lineup would be if Mancini is a starter or Ledmus Diaz is a starter. They are starting Trey Mancini as their designated hitter. I'm fine with the lineup the way that it is today for the Houston Astros. It's your typical lineup. Jose Altuve's leading it off at the top of the order. You have Jeremy Pena, who's batting second, playing shortstop. They love Pena in that two-hole. Yordan Alvarez is batting third. Alex Bregman, 4th, Tucker, 5th, Gurriel, 6th, Mancini, 7th, Chaz McCormick, 8th, and Martin Maldonado, 9th. So really no surprises for the starting lineup. Now, Mancini's the DH and Yordan's in left field, which, look, I think Yordan's a better left fielder defensively than Trey Mancini is.
Keeping him healthy?
No, not so much in the playoffs.
Okay.
But if Dusty's going defensive replacement late in the game, I don't love that idea. Because you take, if it's a two-run game and you're going defense in the outfield, that means you're pulling Yordan's bat out of the game.
Yeah, you can't do that.
Ryan Pressly gives up two runs in the ninth, and now you go into extras and you don't have Yordan's bat.
Yeah,
I think Mancini being the DH call. And Yordan in left field, I think it eliminates Dusty's options of going to a defensive replacement in the outfield late in the game, because that bat's just too important.
Yeah, I don't think it's forward thinking on Dusty's part, simply for the reason that you just stated. I think it's a great call. I think that you can easily make a change with pulling Mancini out of left field, and you actually gain defensive and maybe even some offensive help in terms of a guy that can hit for average, whoever you replace him with, and still might have some pop, and you don't take Yordan out of the lineup. I totally agree with what you just said there.
Now, unless you've already made the decision that you're just not going to do that, I'm fine with it, because Yordan's a better defender than Trey Mancini.
He's got great arm.
He does have a He's got more range.
He doesn't have blazing speed. He doesn't have blazing speed because he never looks like he's going after a ball hard. But, yeah, I think that in terms of from a defensive perspective, he's better than Brantley, I think.
Defensively?
Yep.
At this stage of their career,
yes, I do.
Yeah, Brantley, at his peak, I think was better. But
I agree with that. But I think
right now, this year, I would say that Yordan is as well. You go with the lineup, Maldonado catching instead of Vasquez?
It's JV, so I am.
No personal center fielder.
You don't
get
the personal center fielder, so you sacrifice and say, but you get the personal catcher that he feels most comfortable with. Look, that's the biggest concern for me. This team knows that you like the back of their hand. They know what you've done to them. They know how you've done it to them. They know everything about you, and that's why you need to have him be as comfortable as possible, because you do have to remember the biggest hiccup of the season for Justin Verlander happened in Seattle against this Mariners team, where he got, what, quadruple donged? I think he gave up four bombs in that game. And so they know him really well. So you got to make sure that he is comfortable and he's in a groove as quickly as possible, and then let him settle in and go, because this isn't like playing a team from the American League East where they only see him in one or two series at best, and you're still guessing in terms of how he goes about his business. They know how he goes about his business.
That goes both ways.
It does.
It goes both ways, but you're right. Seattle has had, I wouldn't call it success, but they've had history with Verlander, mm-hmm. and dudes in their lineup that have homered off of Justin Verlander. Julio Rodriguez has one. Ty France has one. Suarez has one. Mitch Haniger has two. Carlos Santana has nine.
That's a Dusty Baker move.
That goes back to the AL Central
days. That's a Dusty Baker where you say, that guy once was a really devastating hitter in this league. I'm putting him in the lineup now. I mean, yeah, back in the day, sure, Santana's a guy you when he was with Cleveland, that's a guy you fear. I mean, wherever he is in the Seattle lineup against Justin Verlander right now today, I'll put my money on JV.
Yeah, he's batting towards the bottom of the lineup. I was wondering if he was going to play today, because he hurt his knee.
But wasn't
in the second game against
was
Toronto?
It him? Wasn't it him that Dusty said earlier in the year that guy's always been that guy's a stud stick against righties or something like that? And it's like
probably
now.
Probably not. His numbers aren't good, but he gives you good professional at bats. He's kind of like
he's contact.
He's kind of like Yuli in a way. Like,
that's a good call.
Santana used to have way more power than Yuli ever did.
I was going
to
say,
but Santana now, he still draws his walks and he still makes contact. Like, the numbers aren't great.
He's a professional zone commander.
He gives you a professional at bat.
Yes,
he gives you a professional at bat. The numbers aren't there, but he gives you a professional at bat. 713-780 ESPN. Any objections to the Astros ALDS roster? How you feeling about the lineup? 713-780-3776. Also, kind of hinted, Lance McCullers hinted yesterday, that Fromber would be going in Game 2. Dusty Baker has announced it will be Fromber in Game 2. How are we feeling about that? Skiller Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Imagine a school day built around your child's needs and interests. It's possible with K-12. K-12-powered schools are accredited, tuition-free, online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. Students learn from state-certified teachers trained to teach online. And with the flexibility to learn wherever there's internet, it can fit into any family schedule. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. You can make the switch at any time. Go to k12.com/podcast today to learn more.